Well, thanks very much. I appreciate once again the opportunity to be with you this morning. Let me just simply say that I have really enjoyed working with all of the folks associated with Growth Energy, not the least of which is Tom Bias, and I think you've added a good addition in Jim Miller. As you all know, Jim worked with us at USDA for a number of years. We were sorry to see him go, but he is a friend and somebody who understands this industry and understands Congress. So you've got a dynamic team of folks working for you. And Tom, I appreciate your counsel and friendship. Whenever there's an issue, it's very easy to reach out to Tom and get the latest information and direction. So you've got a good team working for you. And, of course, you're going to need a good team because we're in a very interesting time, a very interesting time for this industry and for rural America and for agriculture. And I guess first and foremost, I want to reaffirm something that ought to be obvious, which is that we strongly believe in this industry. We strongly believe in renewable fuel and the opportunities that it creates to revitalize and renew a rural economy that is in need of revitalization and renewal. We have taken a number of steps at USDA to indicate that support, and not the least of which is implementing a number of the Farm Bill programs in 2008, investing in new biorefineries, continuing to work with nearly 1,000 producers to produce alternative feedstocks, to the research hubs that we've established to look at the supply chain for feedstocks for advanced biofuels, to the 245 companies that we're currently helping with resources as they produce components for advanced biofuel, to the efforts that we have underway with our aviation industry, a commercial aviation industry, and our farm-to-fly program, and the work that we're doing with the United States Department of Defense and Department of Energy in trying to create a drop in aviation fuel. We are committed to this industry because we understand its benefits. We understand that it's about farm income. It's about stabilizing and maintaining farm income, which is at record levels. That just doesn't happen. It happens because farmers around the country have a multitude of ways in which they can market their products. They're not focused on just simply one market. They now have choice. And as a result of that choice, there's competition. As a result of the competition, there is an opportunity for farmers to profit. There are jobs associated with this industry, important jobs, good-paying jobs. And these jobs happen to be located in places like Emmitsburg, where POET has invested a substantial amount of money, hiring good folks from rural America, allowing some of those folks to preserve their farms, because many farm operations require that off-farm income that a good-paying job provides. This is about consumer choice and an opportunity for consumers to enjoy less expensive gas. Often not recognized or appreciated is that as a result of a strong renewable fuel industry, consumers around the United States enjoy less expensive gas than they would otherwise be paying. Pick your study, 25 cents a gallon, dollar a gallon. Bottom line is people are saving money as a result of this industry. It's also about environmental benefits. There's no question that air quality, water quality is benefiting from this industry. And we're reducing our reliance on foreign oil, as everyone knows. Not too many years ago, we were importing nearly 62% of the oil in this country from foreign sources, some of which didn't necessarily agree with us on a lot of issues. Today, we're now below 45%, and that's continuing to drop. It's a result of additional oil production in this country, but it's also a result of a renewable fuel industry. And then there's the issue of octane. You know, the reality is the petroleum industry needs octane, and they understand and appreciate the value of ethanol in terms of providing that octane. That leads me to believe, and this is something that is a personal opinion, it's not an administration opinion, it's not a USDA opinion, it's not a President Obama opinion, it's a Tom Vilsack opinion. I think the industry understands that octane is important. They understand the importance of ethanol. They understand the importance of renewable energy. And what they would really like to have happen is for this industry not to succeed so all those production facilities could be made available for 10 cents on a dollar. That's what big oil's interest is. And that's why it's important for us to be very strong in support of the renewable fuel standard, because that's what's helped to create the opportunity for all of these benefits. And we will continue to be strong in our support for the RFS. We believe it's working. Now, and we have proof of it. The EPA obviously has made a decision for 2013 and signaled what they are likely to do in 2014 to make adjustments, to make modifications, to make changes that reflect market conditions. That's the way it's supposed to work. There's no need for Congress to intervene in this. There's no need for Congress to try to rewrite this renewable fuel standard. They got it right the first time. They set it up, and they created mechanisms that would allow adjustments from time to time. We have been supportive of the EPA's efforts because we think it sends the right signal to the entire country that we're aware of market conditions, we're aware of the challenges. You know, I was in Brazil not long ago, and I asked the Brazilians, how was it that they were able to expand their industry so significantly across the country? And I wasn't surprised by their answer, but I wanted to confirm what their answer was. You know, I often hear that American auto producers are having a difficult time producing the kind of cars that will use higher blends of ethanol, the engine issue that they raise from time to time, which I thought was kind of interesting since I saw a lot of cars in Brazil driving around, American companies' cars driving around. I said, well, you know, how is it you guys get these cars and we can't? I said, it's not the cars. It's the distribution system. We can sell it and people buy it. I don't think it's unusual that those who oppose this industry are making it very difficult for the USDA to continue to provide financial support for blender pumps and for distribution systems. They don't want those distribution systems because they know if those distribution systems are there, people will use them. And more ethanol and more renewable fuel will be sold. And that's a competition issue. And that's one of the reasons why I'm a bit frustrated by this RINs discussion, because frankly, they have a solution to this issue, and that is to work with us to increase distribution opportunities. We're ready, willing, and able to use REAP resources and other programs within USDA to provide help and assistance, because we know if we can distribute more, if we can blend more, this system and this industry will be healthier. Now, there are efforts in a variety of ways in Congress to try to find a way, an avenue, to change this system. And we may take some solace in the fact that some of the momentum has been taken out of this effort by what the EPA has done. But this is the concern I have. And that is, it appears to be some opportunity in the House of Representatives through leadership to try to connect the RFS to something bigger and larger, something that has to get done, something that we need to have happen. So you put the supporters of the RFS and of the industry in a very difficult political position. Do you vote, for example, to continue the budget, continue the funding of government, or do you not, because you're concerned about this little amendment that was attached to the continuing resolution or the budget act that says that we're going to significantly change the RFS? We need to be concerned about that. We need to be on top of that. And honestly, the response is not just don't do that. The response ought to be from everybody in rural America that cares about rural America, if you're going to play that game, we have a better suggestion. Why don't you attach a farm bill and get that done? Here's why that farm bill is so important. Because the Senate-passed version of that farm bill contains a strong commitment to renewable energy and the bioproducts that can be produced from renewable energy production. It contains an expansion of opportunity, not just simply funding refineries, but also funding the opportunity to support those that produce bioproducts, biochemicals, bioplastics, a wide variety of new opportunities that rural America needs. This is the linchpin to revitalize and change the rural economy. And it needs to be changed. Despite the best efforts of this group and of renewable energy, what we have seen for the first time in our history is that Americans and the population of America, that we've seen a decline in rural population. an actual decline, not as a percentage of the overall population, but in real numbers. And I can't tell you how many parents and grandparents I've talked to in my time that I've been in public life who simply want their kids or their grandkids to have an opportunity to stay where they were raised, to come back home to where they were raised. Now, you can't do that unless you have economic activity. You can't do that unless you can make the case to these bright young people that there is enormous opportunity in that small town to be an entrepreneur, to be an innovator, to be creative, to do something that's never been done before, to re-engineer the American economy, to rebuild these small towns. You can make that case with a strong farm bill that contains mandatory resources and funding for these companies that can make biochemicals and biofuels and renewable energy. There's an unlimited opportunity here. But we can't take advantage of this opportunity unless we have the vehicle to do it. And we've been fussing and fighting about this farm bill now for 2 years. Senate's passed two comprehensive versions. House couldn't get it done last year, kind of halfway got it done this year. And they've created this false discussion about nutrition assistance. So, you know, we're going to cut $40 billion out of nutrition. That's not going to happen. The President doesn't support it. The Senate doesn't support it. I'm not even sure a majority of the House members support it. That's just not going to happen. And I tell you, you start separating food programs from farm programs, I will tell you, the losers will not be the nutrition programs. It will be the farm programs. Why? Math. Less than 1% of America's population farms. Less than 1/10 of 1% of America's population produces 85% of what we grow. Less than 1/10 of 1/10 of 1% produces 50% of what we grow. 33,000 farming operations produces 50%. Now, in a country of 305 million people, and you got 33,000 operations that produce 50% of what we grow, that's a really small percentage. And those are the folks benefiting from farm programs. On the other side of the ledger are 47 million Americans that are in need of nutrition assistance. They don't just live in rural America, they live all over America. And you tell me how I'm supposed to go up and talk to an urban or suburban legislator whose district is primarily urban or suburban and make the case that these farm programs are vitally essential to their constituents. They are, but it's a difficult case to make because there's so few farmers. And the connection between farming and our food supply is difficult for folks to understand. They think food comes from someplace other than a farm. And so it's important for us to have a comprehensive farm bill that attracts lots of support. That's why a farm bill contains not just the commodity programs, not just crop insurance, but trade promotion, opportunities to expand agricultural trade, which is at record levels. That's why it includes conservation programs. That's why it includes rural development programs. That's why it includes a strong research type. It's comprehensive. It's a game plan for rural America. And if we care about rural America, we ought to be caring about getting that farm bill done, not monkeying around with the RFS, not playing games on behalf of big oil, but understanding who's and what's at stake. Now, we're going to spend some time here in this Capitol talking about Syria. Well, we should. But I want folks to focus on one aspect of that. When and if Congress makes a decision to authorize military action, when and if the President implements that decision, who is going to implement it? General, you know this. Who's going to implement it? Who's going to be on that ship or in that plane? It's going to be a kid from rural America. Disproportionate number of our military come from these small towns. 16% of America's population, nearly 40% of our military. So you're going to tell me that we're going to continually send those young men and women into a situation that's dangerous, but we can't find the will or the way that when they come back home and they live military service, that they have a genuine, real, meaningful opportunity to go back home, to run an ethanol production facility, to be a CEO of a new biochemical facility, to go back on the farm because our Congress couldn't find the will or the way to pass a farm bill. It's not right. And when you go up and talk to your members of Congress to support the RFS, I think an additional message is, fellas, ladies, we've been waiting a long time for the farm bill. Don't be sending our young men and women into harm's way and not give them a decent opportunity back home. Get your work done. One last thing, and that is you're going to hear, by golly, we've got so much work to do, and there's so little time. Maybe you've already heard that this morning. I don't know. They got 9 working days in September. Last time I checked, September had 30 days. Now we've lost a few days. But you know, when work has to get done, you don't take Friday off. You don't take Saturday off. Shoot, farmers don't take Sunday off. Maybe a good idea for Congress to send a message to the rest of the country is we're not going to just work 9 days. We're going to work as many days as it takes to get the work done. We're going to get a farm bill done. We're going to get a budget. We're going to provide certainty. We're going to get immigration reform. Because the reality is we're having this conversation about rural America. It's just as important that we have the hands in rural America to do the work. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And if you have a lot of work, you need to spend the time to get it done. And they'll say, well, you know what, we don't have enough time, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to extend the existing programs, the Farm Bill. We're going to extend those existing programs, and we're going to buy ourselves a little more time. But we heard that last year, and it didn't work to get a Farm Bill. An extension of time is just simply a reward for failure. None of the companies that are represented here would reward their personnel for failing. You wouldn't be giving out bonuses. You wouldn't be giving out extensions of contracts and employment opportunities for people who fail. There's a message for people who fail. You'd be asking them to get to work, get the job done. So an extension isn't right. Here's the risk. If they extend existing programs, they may have the idea that they're going to take some money from existing programs to fund budget deficit reduction. And there's a good target for that. It's called direct payments, right, Jim? Nobody likes direct payments except a few folks now. And they want to take those direct payments and they want to apply all of that money to deficit reduction. Now, if they do that, then they have no flexibility to shape a farm bill because you need money to fund some of these programs. So an extension risks the opportunity for Congress to take the money and not create the programs. And there are a multitude of other reasons, including a problem we have with Brazil and cotton that could potentially impact and affect not just American agricultural products, but goods and services across the board. Because beginning October 1st, we're not going to be making payments of $12 million a month to Brazil to avoid retaliation because we don't have the authority to make those payments. And so Brazil is faced with a decision whether they just simply accept that or whether they begin retaliation. $850 million a year, potentially, against goods and services. All that can be eliminated with the passage of a farm bill. All that can be eliminated with the focus of Congress on the right thing. Let's not change the RFS. Let's not screw up something that's working. Let's not take away all the benefits that the renewable fuel industry has provided to this country. Let's build on those benefits. Let's have a comprehensive farm bill. Let's expand that energy title. Let's provide resources for the expansion of new opportunities in this area. And then let Growth Energy and the companies within Growth Energy take advantage of those opportunities. And what we will see is new opportunity in rural America. We'll see those young men and women coming out of military service understanding that they can come back home. They can raise their kids in the same value system, in the same community that they were raised, that provided them the understanding that when the country gives something to you, you've got to give something back to it. That's what I'm concerned about, folks, that if we continue to see a shrinkage of rural America, we're going to continue to see an erosion of that value system that has made this country great. That's what you're working for. That's what you're advocating for. And that's what you have been helping us to provide. So thank you very much. With that, I'll be glad to answer questions.